The following is a presentation of Remnant.
Hi, this is Jerry Gotts, and welcome to Remnant Church Online. We hope that you'll find today's message challenging, full of hope, and most of all, practical. If you have questions, comments, or need a little more help on any of the issues that are raised by today's message, drop me a line at jerry@remnantchurchonline.com. Thanks a lot. God bless you, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to a message from Pastor Jerry Gotze.
I feel bad for her every Sunday. I'm going to redo that video. One Sunday, she's going to like jump out of the way. No. Good morning. We're going to talk this morning about Goldilocks. Believe it or not, there was a time when you could have called me Goldilocks. I had long blonde hair. It's been a while. You know, I've got one somewhere. Here are the tags for today: at Jerry Gotze, hashtag Goldilocks, hashtag Fractured Fairy Tales, at Remnant Church. Please, Instagram, Facebook, social media, the message. Let's get the word out today, shall we? We're going to talk a lot about being happily ever after today. Let's pray. God, thanks for your grace and your mercy. And Father, I believe that there's the right mix of people here today. That Father, there are people here who've been married a long time, people who are thinking about getting married, and people who are just kind of in the middle of it. God, I pray that you'll open our hearts to hear from you today. Thanks, Father. I ask it in your name. Amen. The story of Goldilocks, little blonde-headed girl goes wandering around the woods. I don't know where the parents are. A lot of these fairy tales, you look at it and you think, where are the parents of these kids? They're just wandering around the woods, going into bears' houses. Where's your mother? Anyway, she's wandering around the woods and she comes upon a house that the bears have left because their porridge was too hot. Ooh, porridge. Yum, yuck. Anyway, they go for a walk. She wanders in the house like you would if you're a heathen or something. I don't know. Anyway, she goes in the house, and she says, oh, there's porridge. And she tastes the dad's porridge. Oh, it's too hot. Tastes mom's porridge. Oh, it's too cold. Baby bear's porridge, just right. She eats all of his porridge. What an ingrate. She eats all of his porridge. Anyway, so then she wants to sit down, so she goes, and she sits in the dad's chair. Oh, it's too hard. Or it's too tall, I think it was. Goes to the mom's chair. Oh, it's too low. You see a pattern emerging here? Goldilocks is just a spoiled brat. Anyway, she finds baby bear. Oh, and it's just right. And then she breaks it because she's too big for it. I don't know. Maybe Goldilocks had a weight problem. I don't know. Who am I to say? She was full of porridge. I don't know. It's heavy stuff. I don't know. She gets sleepy and she thinks, I'll go home and sleep. No, she thinks, I'll sleep here. Because why wouldn't you? You've already broken and entered. You might as well. We have had crime scenes, by the way, where the burglars have gone to sleep in the front yard of the house. Makes them easier to catch. One guy was in making himself a sandwich. Yeah. Take a couple of bites because we're going to put you in cuffs now. So she goes to the dad's bed. It's too hard. Goes to the mom's bed. It's too soft. Goes to the baby's bed and falls asleep. And then the bears come and find her in their house and they eat her and kill her. I don't think that's the way it ends, but it really should. I mean, that's really, you start eating a bear's food, sleeping in their bed, breaking their furniture. Bears are not known for their niceness. They're going, anyway. Here's the thing. A lot of us, when we talk about marriage, we talk about dating, we're a lot like Goldilocks. I'm going to date him. Oh, no. I don't like him. I'm going to date her. Ooh, she's just right. No, she's not. And neither are you, Sparky. Here's the problem. We all carry with us baggage. We all carry with us our good and our bad traits. Now, I've told you before, when I was dating Lynette, I really didn't want to mess this up. because she was the best-looking girl I'd ever gone out with. Still is the best-looking girl I've ever gone out with, by the way. Just to clear that all up. I could have gotten ugly quick. In fact, when I brought her down to visit, the first time I brought her down, one of the kids that was in my youth group, Pete Sanchez, said, "Gotsy, you better marry her quick before she gets too smart, because she's way too good for you." Way to go, Pete. Thank you. He's right, but I'm what I call way over-chicked. She's way up there. We look at our dating relationships and our marriage relationships, and we think that, oh, they're going to be just right. No, marriage takes work. This lady was seeing her counselor, and here's what she told her counselor. She said, "I was looking for the ideal, and I married an ordeal, and now I want a new deal." What happens is we get all these expectations about marriage. We think all these things, and then they don't meet expectations. Then we decide, well, I want out. But that's not God's way. In fact, you better figure that out before you say I do. I do very few marriages anymore. If you want to come to me and ask me to marry you, I'm going to put you through the ringer. It's counseling sessions. It's all of these things because I don't want to just do marriages. I don't just do marriages. I just don't think that's a good thing for me to do. I want to make sure that you, two people that I stand before and before God and their families say, I'm going to marry these two people. I want to know beyond a shadow of a doubt, there is enough there for them to work together and to make something out of their lives together. And if not, I won't do it. I've said no to a lot of weddings. Plus, I hate doing them. No. Look at Luke chapter 14, verse 28 through 30. "Don't begin until you count the cost. For you would begin, who would begin construction of a building without first calculating the cost to see if there's enough money to finish it? Otherwise, you might complete only the foundation before running out of money, and then everyone would laugh at you. They'd say, 'There's the person who started that building and couldn't afford to finish it.'" Count the cost. Before you marry that person, look at them and say, "Is this the person I can spend the rest of my life with?" And I know. "Oh, but Jerry, we're in love. When I kiss him, my toes curl up." That's athlete's foot. That's not love. "Oh, Jerry, when we hug, I get butterflies in my stomach." That's indigestion. That's not love. Don't mistake those two things. And here's the thing. We know that marriages don't always go according to plan, but there is marriage in the animal kingdom. Like, check this out. Yeah, it's a married couple. That's a married couple. Okay, I hear you. Yeah, okay. I'm not going to ask if you can relate because somebody will get punched. Let's talk about some misconceptions of marriage. Here's misconception number one: I will live happily ever after. I will live happily ever after. One woman wrote this: "I thought he would make me happy. After all, that's what he said. Then when I wasn't happy all the time, I became miserable, resentful, and tried to force solutions." The reason a lot of marriages break up is because we have this idea that every moment we spend with our spouse is going to be happy. I deserve happiness. You deserve one of these, but no, I don't care. We've been brainwashed with this idea that love is always something that you feel. And if we love each other for a lifetime, then we're always going to feel good and happy. I mean, Cinderella lived happily ever after. Snow White, Prince Charming, happily ever after. Every wedding We have the couple embrace. They say the vows. They have these elaborate wedding ceremonies. My brother Greg's wedding had every single thing you'd ever seen in a wedding all crammed into one wedding. They had the candle ceremony. They had people singing. They had this. They had that. They had everything except like the lighting of a sacrifice. And by the time the wedding was over, I was willing to light something on fire. I would have shoved one of the bridesmaids into a candelabra or something. I just wanted to see. Greg's going to watch this. What's wrong with you? People who've been married for just a year say stupid things like, I guess you don't love me anymore. You know when Lynette and I had our first fight? On our honeymoon. Our honeymoon. Later on, we say things like, I don't think I've ever been happy with you. Love isn't something that you feel that makes you happily ever after. It's something that you do. Emotion is involved, but there's a lot more than that feeling. Love is the product of an action, not the source of it. Love comes because of action, not because of it. You think, oh, if I just, you know, we kiss and we hug and we feel good, so we must be always going to be happy. He must love me. No. No. And I'll tell you, if you're a single right now and you're in a physical relationship with the person you're dating, you're going to confuse physicality with love. Sorry. The act of sex is just that. Don't confuse it with love. Now, the way I used to explain it to my youth groups, sex is a lot like a bonfire. Okay? If you're at home, you and your wife, you're home, fireplace is going, laying there in front of the fireplace, got a little Martinelli's going there, little Barry White playing on the stereo. You're feeling me now. You're feeling me. All right. Stay with me now. You look at that fireplace and, oh, baby, it's romantic. Somebody lock the door, okay? Don't want the kids coming home now. You take that same fire out of the fireplace and put it on the drapes, now it's not pretty. Now it's destructive. Now it's going to cause suffering and pain. You take the physical side of a relationship out of the marriage contract, out of the marriage covenant, and you put it anywhere else, there's going to be pain and suffering. Guarantee it. They did a study that said that couples who are having sex without marriage will stay together longer simply because they're having sex. Even after they both know it's over, they'll stay together. Even if they both know what's wrong, they'll stay together because they have this sexual relationship. Did I forget to tell you that today's message is PG-13? If you got a child with me, you may want to say earmuffs every now and then. Look through 1 Corinthians 13. Let's look at it. 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient and kind. What are those? Actions. Love is not jealous or boastful or proud or rude. It does not demand its own way. It's not irritable. Keeps no record of being wronged. It does not rejoice about injustice, but rejoices whenever the truth wins out. Love never gives up, never loses faith, is always hopeful, and endures through every circumstance. That is a whole paragraph full of action. Love is not just about your toes curling up in your shoes when you see her. Love is about action. And we somehow think that if our feelings aren't okay, we're not in love anymore. Hey, act like you're in love. Work your way back to it. When I hear somebody say, I just don't love him anymore, I want to say, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, I'm going to get a divorce. Really? Because that'll fix it. Right? That'll fix it. All it does is that heartache, especially if there are children involved. Philippians 2, 3 to 4, don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interest, but take an interest in others too. See, when it all comes down to it, marriage is not about you. It's about us. It's not about me. It's about us. And I will tell you that some of the worst times in my marriage have been when I forgot that fact, when I thought it was all about me, when I got caught up in me. And I want this, and I want that, and I want it to be this way, and I want it to be that way. And I never one time stopped and thought about the other person involved in that relationship. See, we want to think that we're supposed to be 100% happy all the time. Are you ever 100% happy all the time? Some of you are very unhappy right now. I wish I hadn't come today. Just wait, it's going to get worse. Look, I've got a job at the sheriff's office. I probably like 85% of my job. But man, that 15%, ooh. That 15% that I don't like, I really don't like. So should I just give up my job? Should I just walk away from it? You know, I've been at the sheriff's office 14 years now. I can honestly say I've never been 100% happy every single day. So should I just walk away? I'd like to be taller, younger, thinner, have more hair, have some hair. But does that mean that I'm not a good person? Does that mean that there's not any redeeming value in me? U.S. News and World Report had a headline one time that said, "The recipe for wedded bliss, lower your expectations." I tried to find the cover, I couldn't find it. Lower your expectations. Here's what they're talking about. It was the review of a book by Iris Krasnow. She conducted interviews with 300 couples to see what binds couples together and what drives them apart. The book, by the way, if you want to look at it, is called Surrendering to Marriage. It's not a Christian book. Here's what Krasnow said. Once you realize the sustained happiness is not something you should expect from marriage, you can be very happy. Most people have imperfect marriages, so go into it knowing when there's a heaven, hell is right around the corner. I read that, and I thought, that's perfect. Most people have imperfect marriages. We do. You know why? Because we're involved in them. And isn't it arrogance and hypocrisy that we look at the other person and say, you're the one messing this up? Last time I checked, it takes two to tango. You're always the problem here. Really? Always? And again, when you're fighting with your spouse and you use the words always and never, you're always lying and you're never telling the truth. You never take me anywhere. I took you to Walmart 2 times last week. Talking about. Don't tell me I never take you anywhere. I took you to McDonald's. I even supersized your fries. I know how to show a lady a good time. 1 John 5:3 says, loving God means keeping his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. Happiness is a gift that comes as a byproduct of doing the right thing for a prolonged period of time. One more time. Happiness is a gift that comes as a byproduct of doing the right thing for a prolonged period of time. You want to be happy in your marriage? Do the right thing and do it often. If Jesus had chosen to do only what made him happy, he would not have gone to the cross. And we would have no reason to stand here. Instead, he chose to be obedient to his Father. And as a result, he experienced the joy of resurrection. And one day we'll experience the joy of meeting us face to face. And we will experience the joy of meeting him face to face. Hebrews 12, 2 and 3 says, we do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. Because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now he's seated in the place of honor beside God's throne. Think of all the hostility he endured from sinful people. Then you won't become weary and give up. After all, you've not yet given your lives in your struggle against sin. Think of all the hostility he endured from sinful people. Then you won't become weary and give up. Do you mean to tell me that your spouse has done anything worse to you than you've done to God? Do you mean to tell me that your spouse has been more offensive to you than our sin has been to God? That the pain that you've endured is more than the pain Jesus went through during the Passion? Well, I don't think we measure up. You should see your faces right now. There's something in business called a bell curve. And the bell curve is used in a lot of places. They use it in schools. When I was a student, I hated the bell curve because the bell curve says there has to be as many F's as there are A's. And I wasn't always on the right side of the bell curve. By the way, if you're a teacher, I hate the bell curve. I think the bell curve just set points. Anyway, okay? So here's the bell curve. And basically the bell curve says, if you use it in business, it says we're going to find opportunities and we're going to ride those opportunities to the highest point of the bell curve. And then once the bell curve is at its highest, we're going to bail out because we don't want to lose money on the downhill side. Whoever thought up the pet rock was a genius. The pet rock. And it was big for, what, maybe a year? And after that, there were a whole lot of pet rocks on toy store shelves. If you bought pet rocks, okay. But if you bought stock in the pet rock company, you better have gotten out before it went on the downhill side. Now, marriages have an inverted bell curve. They start off really high. They start at the marriage. Oh, we just love each other so much. And then reality sets in. And you begin that slow, sometimes fast descent. That's when there's stagnation, there's criticism, there's neglect. And if you're not careful, it can end in death. Most marriages go through an inverted bell curve. You got the thrill of romance and infatuation. Then you begin to move to discovery and commitment and then down to reality. Here's the problem. If you stay at the bottom long enough, you can't get back to the top. Now, September, Lynette and I will be married 34 years. I will tell you, that our last maybe 10 or years or so have probably been our happiest. But there came a time at one point where it was anything but happy. There came a time at one point that the only thing that kept us together was our faith and our children. Where I woke up every morning and I wasn't sure we were going to make it through the day, and she felt the same way. Here's the thing. If we didn't fight through that dip in the bell curve, we don't get to where we are now. I will tell you that next weekend, we're not going to be here. Because Thursday afternoon, we take our trailer, we're going to the mountains, and I'm going to spend 4 days in the mountains with my sweetie, just her and me. And you know, I'm sure a lot of you guys are fun people to be around. I don't want to be around anybody except my baby. She's my best friend. I can't imagine having more fun with anybody than I have with her. Wouldn't it be a shame if we missed out on the last 10 years because we never fought through the dip? Think of all we would have missed out on. When I talk about decision making, I mention the fact that in high school I tried to kill myself. I took my 65 Rambler Classic and I aimed it at a telephone pole. And I chickened out at the last minute and all I did was crease my fender. So now I was, whatever was depressing me, plus I had a creased fender. And here's the problem. All these years later, I can't even tell you what I was upset about. It was probably a girl. Most of the problems around my life during that time seemed to be because I wanted a girl, I had a girl I didn't want anymore, she didn't want me, but most of us were girl involved. From 16 years old on, though, I've been able to do some incredible things. I met a beautiful woman. Watched two kids be born. I've got two incredible grandbabies. In fact, if you want, later on, I'll play you the tone I have on my watch where my granddaughter Ellie says, "Love you, Papa." You can have my arm before you can have that message. I've stood on the edge of an active volcano in Nicaragua and looked down inside it. I've had incredible cars. I've had all kinds of cool stuff. And you know what? If I had just not chickened out at 16, I would have missed all of that. For something as earth-shaking that I can't remember what it is 40 years later. How foolish would that have been? And I see couples who give up when all they have to do is hang on for a little bit longer. Just hang on. Start acting your way into that emotion. Oh, I don't feel it anymore. Act it. Tell yourself you're ready. When you get to that low spot on the bell curve, you got to do something to shock your system. Start having date nights. Go see a counselor. I'll tell you exactly what Lynette and I did. Independent of each other, we went back and started looking at what it takes to be a man and a woman that God uses. What does the Bible say about being a husband? What does the Bible say about being a father, about being a man? And I realized I'm not talking for Lynette. I don't know where she felt about it. But I know for me, I realized that I was way far away from what I was supposed to be. And so I didn't worry about her. We were always so busy trying to fix the other person, aren't we? Well, if I could just get her fixed. No. Fix you. Here's what I found out. I've got plenty of trouble just trying to keep Jerry Godsey out of trouble. I don't need to try and keep Lynette Godsey out of trouble. I don't think it's possible anyway. Here's the thing. You give up and start all over again. You know what you're going to find? That marriage is going to be the same as the first one. Eventually, you're going to hit a dip, and you're going to have to fix it. So, you better face reality. Nobody lives happily ever after. Oh, Jerry, encourage us more. But you know what? That doesn't mean you don't live happy. That doesn't mean you don't have a great marriage. It just means that every now and then, you got to work it out. Misconception number two. Oh, I love this one. I will change them. I will change them after we get married. Now here's part of the problem in our society. Part of the problem with this is our custom of dating. It was a lot easier in the Old Testament. They just went and said, "Hey, go find somebody to marry my daughter." And the servants went and found somebody that wasn't hideous. Or it maybe could have been sometimes. I don't know. Anyway, they brought him back and said, "Here's your wife." When they bring Rebecca back to Isaac, he has never met her. And the Bible says that Isaac married Rebecca. And then the next verse says, Isaac learned to love Rebecca. We think we got the cart before the horse. Our custom of dating, we got the cart before us. We're going to meet, and we're going to miniature golfing. And we'll laugh, and we'll go to dinner. And then we'll do that again and again. And, you know, look, let's be honest. Guys, look at me, guys. Your first date, you are not who you really are. Your first date, you're wearing your best clothes. You got cologne you're borrowing from somebody else. Because all of your stuff is cheap out of thrifties, you know. Okay? And when you eat, you're not just like you normally do. Cut your steak and come on, come on. And ladies, come on, you're the same. Oh, I can't eat it. I'll just have a salad. You go home, you're ordering pizza on the way home. Yeah, Domino's, get it there fast. I'm hungry. We make false promises. We pretend to like the things the other person does. Oh, honey, I love going to your softball games 3 nights a week. Oh, honey, I like antiquing. I'm really learning to enjoy it. Somebody please shoot me. The comedian Arch Barker said, I deserve to have somebody love me for who I'm pretending to be. Russ Broadfuhrer wrote, courtship is like the 100-yard dash. Anybody can keep his knees high and arms pumping gloriously for that short sprint in the spotlight, but marriage is a marathon that reveals the true character of the runner. Joshua Harris wrote a book called I Kiss Dating Goodbye, and if you're single, you ought to read it. See, the truth is people don't change much after they're married. Our temperament, our background, our gender differences are deeply ingrained in us. Basically, if you really want to change your spouse, you need to know them before they're like 8 years old and start putting in your order early. After a long while, they get relaxed. They begin to revert to their true selves. They begin to reveal their true selves. They say thoughtless words. They have moody attitudes, repeat strange habits, make funny sounds, emit foul smells. And we think, that's not the person I married. Yes, it is. They're the same person they've always been. They just hit it better before. Some of you are like, no, Pastor Jerry, no. I'm totally real every time I date. You're a liar and your breath stinks. Ladies, if you want to know what that guy you're dating is really like, see how he treats his mom and his sisters. That's reality. Guys, you want to know about your girlfriend? Watch how she relates to her teacher or her roommates or other women. Wow. Wow. Did you see what she was wearing? That was horrible. Think she's all that? Guys, run fast, run far. That's why the Bible instructs us to make sure we know who we're marrying. 2 Corinthians 6:14. Don't team up with those who are unbelievers. How can a righteousness be a partner with wickedness? How can light live with darkness? Let's talk about the myth of evangelistic dating. Oh, I'm going to date them and then I'll marry them and then they'll become a Christian. Really? The challenge you get married is not to change the partner, but just to tolerate and then be enhanced by those differences as the two become one. Here's the thing: when you get married, you're going to have some things that you're going to have to learn to handle. You're going to have some things that are going to be vast differences between you two people. Most of those things you can adjust to. Most of those things you can grow to. A spiritual difference is not one of them. And I have seen so many good Christian, and it seems to happen to young ladies the most. So many good Christian young ladies be led astray by guys who weren't Christians, dating guys who weren't Christians. Hey, look, if they're not a Christian, their values, goals, and motivations are different than yours. You've got no business dating them, let alone marrying them. Oh, we're just going to date. We're not going to get married. Hey, moron, you marry who you date. Oh, you know, I take it back. Lynette and I never had a date. We never went on a date. We just walked up one day and said, like Braveheart, I want to marry you. It's my best Mel Gibson. That's all I got. Why did we think that somehow you can marry somebody and not fall for them? You can date somebody and not fall for them. And here's the thing. The non-Christian always does things like, I'll go to church with you sometimes. That's not being a Christian. You know what? I'll go to church with you. That's not being a Christian. Being a Christian is living your life for Jesus Christ. And if they're not walking the walk, don't let them talk the talk. Ladies, and I know I'm making some of you mad right now. You know what? Life is hard, then you die. Don't be easily persuaded, ladies. If they're not Christian now, don't consider that they're going to be later. And you've got to make a choice. And I know it's hard. I know it hurts. I know it's tough. Guys, I know it's difficult, but you know what? It's better to cut bait and run now than have to go through that later on. I have seen firsthand what happens when Christians marry non-Christians, and I've watched the struggle where eventually the husband starts feeling guilty of the time the wife is spending at church. And eventually she starts going to church less and less because she doesn't want to upset her husband. And eventually she falls out with the Lord altogether. And now instead of one person going to hell, we got two. Hey, we're not talking about baby games here. We're talking about eternity. You better know who you're marrying. You better know beyond a shadow of a doubt. Like my cousin Julie said one time, hey, you got to check their fruits. We're talking about dating. I said, wasn't really sure where that one was headed, but I was just stupid enough to ask. All right, Julie, what do you mean? She said, well, the fruits of the Spirit. If they got the fruits of the Spirit, you're okay. But if they don't, you got to walk away. Decision for Christ that they live, then you can talk about marriage. Nowhere in the Bible are we to use dating or marriage as leverage for evangelism. Oh, but if you come to church and you know, go up to the front and then you get baptized, it'll be okay. They've got to live it. They've got to live it. Otherwise, it's just what Mary Poppins called pie crust promises. Easily made, easily broken. Misconception number three. Boy, I made some enemies. Which is good. Sorry. They will meet all my needs. Now, there have been some feminists who said that there is no difference inside between a man and a woman. That men are the same as women. Now, I don't know who said that, but they've obviously never watched Super Bowl Sunday. I was trying to get my wife to watch the hockey playoffs with me last night. I told her, but babe, it's overtime. It's the playoffs. It's the Chicago Blackhawks, my favorite team. I don't like hockey. How can you not like hockey? People go, they ice skate. I mean, they do pirouettes sometimes. It's almost like the Olympics. They fight. What more could you want from them in a sport? I don't like it. Men and women are different. I've said it before, I will say it till I die. The guy that wrote the book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, was wrong. Those two planets are not far enough apart. They should be in different universes, different solar systems, not too close. Willard Harley wrote a book, His Needs, Her Needs, and I don't agree with everything in it, but he did a pretty good job of defining the basic needs of a man and a woman. And he said those needs are quite different, and failure to understand those differences contributes to a great deal of dissatisfaction in marriage. men are different than women. And if that surprises you, that's a whole different talk we need to have. Because you obviously were kicked in the head by something, okay? So, let's talk about the needs of women. These are the needs of women. This is what Harley lists. Affection, conversation, trust, financial security, family commitment. These are our surveys he did and his counseling and all these other things. And these are the basic needs of a woman. Affection, she wants to be loved and valued. Conversation, somebody to listen and talk to me. Guys, muting ESPN and watching it. Yes, dear. You're right. It's not the same thing. Okay, I just getting feeling back in this arm. That's how I learned. Trust, financial security, and family commitment. She wants a husband who's also a good father. Now, do you think the list for men is exactly the same? Oh no. Let's look at the list for men. Well, look at number one. Easy. Calm down there, Hoss. Sexual fulfillment, number one for men. And I think second is like a way distant second. Recreational companionship. He wants a wife who's going to watch hockey with him. Just putting it out there. Thankfully, we're driving home in separate cars. All right. Well, you can talk to me while we watch hockey. Solved. Solved. You can come out to the man cave. The male ego wants an attractive spouse. Okay, got that? Domestic support. He wants peace and quiet when he comes home. I like the idea that the men say they want domestic support. What they really want is for people to shut up when they get there. Youch. Now your men are like, shut up, God, you're getting us in trouble. And men want admiration. Here's the thing. The wife needs affection, and the man needs to feel like he's a hero. These are the basic needs of men and women. And again, you can take or leave this. Okay? This is this guy's opinion, but he's done a lot of studying. And I got to be honest, I think he's pretty close. Pretty darn close, actually. Yeah, men and women are just alike. Did you notice that there's nothing remotely physical on the woman's side? And there's nothing about conversation on the man's side? I mean, just those two things are enough to make you think, It does, when you get to heaven, I am going to have a talk with God when I get to heaven. Say, hey, God, remember that whole two become one thing that you really talked about in the Bible? Couldn't you have made us a little closer together before we had to do that? Because it's really, really hard. It's hard. Women think, when they get married, they think, I'll be valued and understood. And men think, I'll have sex regularly and someone who'll share my hobbies. No. She's not going to go drag racing with you for the most part. She's not going to build model airplanes with you. And ladies, he is probably not going to sit hours on end and talk to you like your girlfriends do. We're just not wired that way. And some guys are really good at it. And again, there's always exceptions. Oh, you've never met my husband. Okay, all right. I would love to be in his head while this is going on, though. You're right, honey. You know what? I do love the look of that. I think maybe an eggshell white on that wall would be good. Inside, he's thinking, dear God, please, please, give me a stroke or her a stroke. Somebody get a stroke, please, God. One of the reasons for this misconception, I got to be honest with you, is parents. We raise kids to think they're the be-all and end-all. We raise kids to think that the world revolves around them. that everybody's supposed to think you're the most important baby in the whole wide world. I got news for you, Sparky. The world's not waiting for you. If you're a kid right now in high school, the world's not waiting for you. They don't care if you ever show up. And that's always a shock to them. What? What? I coached Little League this year. You ever want to hear about spoiled parents or parents who think their kids are everything? Coach Little League. Kids that can't figure out which hand to put their glove on. When you hear their mama talk about them, they're all-stars. Oh, he should be playing second base. Ma'am, if I put your son in second base, he would die. A line drive would hit him in the head, and he would die. One of our second to last games, I missed our last two games because I was teaching at University of Phoenix, and I'm talking to Critter on the phone, and he says, yeah, I put the kids around, and Critter's around, and he goes, and while I'm talking to him, he's moved some of these guys, like this one kid especially, in, and he's playing second base. And Critter's talking about how they're playing in the field. Obviously, he goes, oh, crud, I got to call you back, Dad. And I thought, oh, dear Lord, he's killed one of those kids. Come to find out, it wasn't our kids. It was one of the other kids. We grow up in this home that's this false image of how everything revolves around us. Then we get married, and we think it's going to continue. And problem is, your wife or your husband is probably growing up in the same kind of home, and those two worlds aren't going to mix. It doesn't take long for us to realize that person is selfish. That person over there is selfish. He's not thinking about me all of the time. He wants to play sports when I want him home. She criticizes me when I want to be encouraged. Truth be told, both may just need a spanking. Like it or not, you may have to go an entire lifetime without having all of your needs met. You might have to go your entire lifetime. Now, I know this is going to come as a shock to some of you, so just hang with me. The person you marry may not ever meet all of your needs. Oh, Jerry, please say it's not so. The truth is, there's nobody in this whole world can meet all your needs except Jesus Christ. Amen. Matthew 5:6 says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Do you know when I found Lynette? When I quit looking. I did. I was in college, Costa Mesa. And I'd been dating, and it was just so frustrating. And I finally said, you know what? I just got all my priorities out of whack. I wanted to be in music, and I wanted to do all this stuff. And I said, you know what? That's it, God. Just you and me. I'm just going to concentrate on my relationship with you. And I did. And literally within like a month, maybe not even that long, I'm sitting in my grandpa's church in Beaumont. I look across the sanctuary, and there's this beautiful blonde girl. We make eye contact, and I think, okay. I'm sure she didn't feel anything right then. It's like, why is this creep looking at me? I know he's the pastor's grandson, but it's so creepy. So I walk up to Iris, one of the ladies in the church, and say, hey, who's that good-looking blonde girl over there? She said, that's my niece. Would you like to meet her? I said, well, yes, I would. Went to Carl's Jr. with all the people after the church, sitting around talking. A few weeks later, Grandpa's got a pastor over. He wants to talk about some stuff with him. He says, here, Jerry. He says, why don't you take Lynette to lunch? I'll pay. And here's some coupons for Sizzler. Guys, here's how you know she's a keeper. She goes to lunch with you at Sizzler, and you use coupons, and she sticks around. That's how you know. We talked during lunch. I drove back to Costa Mesa, and I told the guys in my dorm, I just met the girl I'm going to marry. And I did. And we didn't have a long courtship. That was February. We got married in September. I don't always recommend that. But you know what? If it's right, it's right. If it's not, it's not. If it's right, 6 months won't matter. If it's wrong, 2 years won't matter. Well, we're taking it slow to find out if we're compatible. You know what? If you're taking it that slow, you're not. Again, you would love the look that I see in your faces right now. He's out of his mind. See, here's the thing. Once you get married, you've got to have that relationship with Christ to make it work. And so you're better off preparing your life. You're better off preparing for marriage, preparing for dating, by getting your life right with Jesus. Grow toward him. As you grow toward him, if your wife or your husband is doing the same thing, as you both grow toward him, you grow closer to each other. It's the only way it's going to work. Matthew 6:33, seek the kingdom of God above all else and live righteously, and he will give you everything you need, including the marriage that you deserve, including the opportunity to maybe not live happily ever after, but to definitely live happily. Is this easy? Nope. It'd be easier to guard razor blades. But you know what? It is so worth it. It is so worth it. God, thanks. You're so good to us.
You've been listening to a presentation of Remnant. For more information, visit us at remnantchurchonline.com.